Okay, so today is the second day of Hanukkah. It is the 4th of December, 2018. It is 26th of Kislev, Tufshin Ayin Tes, right? And here we go. So we are in Perek Yud of Midbar, and we come across, towards the end of that story, the discussion between Yisro and Moshe. Well, Moshe is trying to convince Yisro to stay with the Jewish people. Now, why does Moshe want Yisro to stay? So the Mefarshim offer different possibilities, that it would be a Chil Hashem if he leaves, that he's one who gives good Itza to Moshe. And the Or HaChaim throws in this reason as being that he may have originally implied that it's a good idea for you to stay because you're so helpful, but ultimately Moshe says you better stay because you know our location.
You know too much.
You are our location, therefore you have to stay. So that, of course, brings, I don't know, of course, but that brings about two stories. One was made into a movie recently, the movie Lone Survivor, where these Navy SEALs are going to attempting to assassinate some Taliban leader in Afghanistan, and while they're getting into position, just four of them are like taking out a whole city. As they're getting into position, a young boy comes across them, and they have to figure out what to do with this boy. Either they could kill him, or they could let him go back. And you can see in the preview of the movie them saying to each other, well, "I don't kill innocent people." And they ultimately let him go. He runs right away into town, tells that there's these four commandos out in the forest, and they get under siege. And I'm not sure if any of them survive. One survives.
Lone survivor.
Okay, and one survives.
Lone survivor.
Right. Okay. So that of course raises the moral and ethical question as to whether it would have been permissible, preferable, or justifiable to kill that kid and not let him go and not let that possibility exist that he would go and report on them. So a similar story is told. Now, as I looked into trying to get the details of this story, I realized that the story is somewhat in doubt as to whether it actually took place this way. But the story goes that in the days leading up to the War of Independence in Israel in early May 1948, so the Gush Etzion block, which is where now currently the Yeshivat Har Etzion is, and the Frat is in that area. That area was under Jewish hands. There was a moshav there, and they were under siege. They collected them, all the people that were still there. They sent out all the women and children, and they kept most of the women and children, and they kept those that were still there. They into one place, which is, I believe, the Gush Etzion, the Kfar Etzion, meaning that one of the four. They were running low on supplies. A convoy was supposed to go and bring them supplies, a convoy of 40 people. Three of them ended up not going because they decided that we were only going to allow people to come that actually had weapons, so three were out. Two were out. Yeah, three were out, and then another one person sprained their ankle, and he left also as they were traveling. But the plan was that they were going to go through the night and be able to get past the Arabs over the course of the night. The problem is they didn't get going until it was too late. And there was a question whether they should even go, or maybe they would delay a day. They ended up going. And in the morning, so the story goes that they came across a Arab shepherd and debated what to do with him and decided to not do anything to him. And he went and told people that these Jews were in the area, and that allowed, and they then took their arms, and the surprise was gone, and there was fighting throughout the day, and ultimately these 35 were all killed. There is a whole story in Rabbi Gorin's memoirs that he describes after the war going and getting their bodies and bringing them to be buried in what, actually, I didn't say where, I assume what eventually became known as Har Herzl. I think if you go there is the place called the Makom of the Lamed Hay. They're known as the Lamed Hainix. I think there are streets, actually, in several cities in Israel, Rehov HaLamed Hay, the 35 people who were killed in that group. So that story is told. Now, there has been doubt raised about that story, whether it actually happened, that they actually had someone in their possession that they could have killed and could not. It could be they were spotted in other other ways, and perhaps they didn't actually have that ability to do it. But that story has been used in Jewish. If it didn't happen, it certainly could have happened. And the moral challenge that comes up is a real questionable one. This story has been used in Israel has a concept known as purity of arms, Tohar HaNeshek. Those that are in Beth HaMedrash for Shavuos, that fellow who came, whose name I'm forgetting, that the military. That guy, whatever his name was, so this is what he does for a living. He's a moralist, a philosopher trying to figure out what the army should do. And was it appropriate, was it not appropriate to theoretically let that person go, or in the case of these soldiers, these Navy SEALs, to let that person go? So similar story to with regards to Yisro, which is like, Yisro, you can't go for this reason. Is that appropriate or is it not appropriate? So now, taking a step back, okay, so how does one go about figuring out a psak to this shiloh, right? How does one, when one is confronted with a modern day question, so what is the first, what do you do as a posek? So as a posek, you're trying to place it in the context of halacha, right? So is there what halachic principle is at play with regards to this incident, with regards to this issue? What?
It says in the Bible, there's no good deed that goes unpunished.
The Bible says that.
I don't know about that. Not sure.
Suffolk saving a life.
So it's a Suffolk saving a life. Whose life? Your life.
Your own.
Right. Right, so you are, well, it's not, so you, the potentially it's Sakanas Nefashos, right? And it's potential Sakanas Nefashos, well, it is Sakanas Nefashos, it's endangered you. I mean, letting the person go is putting yourself in danger, because the person could go and tell people, right? Now, he's not putting you in danger, right? He's not going to, he's an old Arab, or he's a young kid, right? He can't do anything to you, right? But what could he do? He could tell someone else. Now, what is that called when a person goes and tells someone else? What? It's
not a
rodef. A rodef is a pursuer. This person is known in halacha as being a
tattletale.
Okay, and specifically in halacha, the language used is a moser.
A moser,
yes, somebody who is giving over information about you to others that's going to be damning to you.
So go back to what you were saying about like where you find it. You find if you're going to be a
right, so you need to plug it into a context of halacha.
Right, so what do you find?
So this category of moser, right? So that probably is the closest we can say. Now, usually moser is used to describe somebody sort of telling the secular authorities on things going on in the Jewish community. It is used today, inappropriately, as many poskim point out, but it is used today, this whole, like the issues that go on about child molestation and those kinds of things you may have heard. So the person who goes and rats out a person, he's known as a moser. Right, that's what they call it. He's a moser, and therefore they go and attack him. Now, if a person is actually a moser, we'll see. It's not necessarily unjustified to attack that person. However, the person who is a whistleblower is not necessarily a moser. Right, it might be a very good reason why they're telling things over. Right, for instance, if you look in the newspapers recently, in the last couple of days, or it's been the last couple of years, in the last couple of days, it's popped up again. This issue of somebody went to there's a group of Hasidish people or Hasidish school graduates that are suing the city for not enforcing their own secular learning laws on the Hasidic school systems, on the school systems in Brooklyn. I mean, the city is giving money to these institutions for covering with the assumption that they're covering basic skills, and what this group is alleging is that for years and years this money has been given, and the city knows that the rules aren't being followed, and they're doing it anyways. Why would they do it anyways? Because they want to be on the good side of these groups, because they all vote in a block, and therefore they're a very powerful political constituency. It's in the New York City area. So this group is now suing the city, not suing the school, suing the city for turning a blind eye on these rules that they imply. So these guys, they're in danger. I mean, some of them are no longer religious, or they're not in the Hasidic community. Some are, but they're putting themselves in danger by opening and what's the danger they're being put into? They're being called a moser, right? How dare you go to the secular authorities and tell them what's going on within our community, right? So that's the principle. Now, what are the rules then with regards to a Moser?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any explicit pasuk describing a Moser, but it certainly appears in the Gemara, and you might be shocked as to the way the Gemara describes it. So I'll give you three Gemaras that we could talk about that refer to this type of situation. Yeah?
Some of them are telling you, let's say, when is it not right? We had discussions of some of these kinds of instances.
Okay.
If you know somebody is a gonifer, you know he's a child molester, you know, do you tell his fiance?
Okay.
I don't know if that's in that category.
Well, yeah, so that's more Lashon Hara L'Toelas, me telling his fiancé, look out, etc. This is more. This is where the person is going to take action against them.
Well, if he's psychotic, where he really is.
Correct. So that's usually what you refer to as L'Toelas, meaning for the benefit of the person who's going to be affected, I'm going to tell that person, watch out for this guy. Right, that's true. But this goes even a little bit beyond that, as you will see. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Bava Kamma, Daf Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, Hahu Gavra Da Hababoy Achvui Ativna Dechavri. There was a person who wanted to show another person's straw. Now, I'm not sure exactly what's going on here. It seems like he's going to alert the secular government this guy has a lot of money, and therefore go after his money. So Asal Kamidrav, he came in front of Rav. Amar Lei, Rav said to him, Lo Tachvi, don't show it. No, I don't know why he did it twice. Amar Lei, he responds, Machvina, Umachvina, I am going to show it.
Show what?
This straw to the king, to the officers of the king, and therefore they're going to either tax him, or they're going to take it, or they're going to, etc. Now, taxing is a little different then than it is now, right? Taxing. Right, the halachic principle of tax to a secular authority, Rishachter points out, is different bisman hazeh than it was in the old days. In the old days, the taxes were pretty much to enrich the king. The king was, you're paying the king protection money, right? As opposed to today, where taxing is, at least in theory, money of a partnership, that we're all contributing money together for things that are going to be for the general welfare, right? That we all give money for the roads, we all give money for the police, we all give money for this, and it's supposedly fair. At least our assumption is that it's more or less fair in America. But anyway, so he shows him. So I'm going to show it. So Yosef Rav Kahana Kami, Rav Kahana was sitting in front of Rav. Shamte l'koi mine. What does that mean? Literally it means he removed his head from his neck. Right? He removed his head from his place. He killed him. And the Gemara goes on and explains why. Karav Yilui. So Rav, who was the rabbi who oversaw this, seems to approve it, because he goes on and says, Banayich ilfu, quotes a pasuk in Yeshayahu, Banayich ilfu shukhvu barosh kolchutzos kesom lichmar. Your children have fainted, they lie fallen on the head of every street like a wild ox trapped in a net. What is that? So the Jews are being compared. So the comparison is that Jews are under the domination of Ovdei Kochavim, right? Like a trapped ox. Matozek kevach nafal mikhmar ein marachman alav. Just as the wild ox, once it falls, they have no pity on it. Af mamun shel Yisrael kevach nafal biyad Ovdei Kochavim ein marachman alav. So too the money of the Jew, once the non-Jews start getting their hand on him, they have no pity on him, and they will continue to come and kill him. What's going on here? So The Rush comments on this. Why is it being permitted? Because once they start getting money, they're going to come back and they're going to try to get more money the next day. And they're going to try to get more money the next day. At some point, they're going to torture and even kill them in order to be able to get money away. So since the informer is putting the life of the victim in danger, you're allowed to kill the informer in order to save that person. Right, so that's a bit of a jump. That's a bit of a stretch. But the Gemara seems to be okay with this, to kill an informer in order to save the life of the person. That's Gemara number one. Gemara number two. Here is in Maseches Brachos. Maseches Brachos should be like this nice Masechta with all these nice topics about food and davening and all these like things. But listen to this story. Rabbi Shila Nagdi Lahu Gavra. That Rabbi Shila once gave... gave makos to a certain person, the Baal Mitzvahs. Why did he get makos? Because Rabbi Shila is I assume in the Amora, right? So Rabbi Shila did this because that person had been boel a mitzvah. That person had relations with an Egyptian woman. Okay, so therefore Rabbi Shila gives him makos. So azal achle be kurtze be makos. So that guy, he's not too happy about getting makos. So he goes and tells the governor, "I was given makos by." He says something bad about Rabbi Shila. I'm not sure what we said. He said he spread slander. I'm not sure what it was. So Amar. So he said, "Oh, sorry." He said, "Ika." This is what he said. "Ika chad gavre biyuda." There's a guy amongst the Jews. The kadayin dina below harmana de malka, that he gives justice without the authority of the king. He has no right to do that. So Shadar Ale Pristaka. So the king sent somebody to investigate against Rabbi Shila. He asked him when he came, Amri Le, they asked him, "My taima nagate lahai. Why'd you give makas to him?" So Amr Lehi says, "Well, I'll tell you why. Deva al Khamarta. Because he had relations with a donkey." Right? So Amr Lehi, they said, "Islach Sadi, do you have any witnesses to this?" He said, "Yeah, Amr Lehi, Hin, yeah, I do." So who's going to be the witness for this? So Asa Eliyahu Idmi Lehi in Shivi Asid. So all of a sudden Eliyahu shows up, looks like a person, he gives testimony. So Amr Lehi, so they say to Rav Shila, "Ihachi Barkatalu, if so, then he should be put to death, right? Why you only give him makos for being, you know, for cohabiting with the donkey? He should have been put to death." So Amr Lehi says, "Well, Anan Miyoma de Galina Me'arin," he says, "from the day that we've been kicked out of our land, Leis Len Rishus Lamikta, we don't have the ability to carry out executions. Asun might be asun avidube, but you can do with it what you want, right? It's not my issue." So ad ma'ini be bedina, while they were looking in the case, the pasach Rabbi Shila v'amr, Rabbi Shila started saying, "Pasach Hashem Abdul v'hagfura, I wonder if this is Hashem." They say, what are you saying? They say to him, "What are you saying?" My kamarta. Amr says, "Well, haki kamina, baruch rachman diyav machusa ba'ar be'im machusa derekia, that how wonderful is Hashem that he created royalty on earth that reflects the royalty in the heaven. Ve'ev Shultan of Arach Medina, investing you with dominion and your lovers of justice, and you guys are wonderful." So Amru, so they say, "Ooh, Chavisa le Yikar de Malchusa Kuli Hai." Wow, the glory of the kingship is so dear to him. Yavi le Kupa. So they gave him a Kupa. What is a Kupa? A Kupa is literally a rod, which is going to allow him to be able to institute his own justice. And they sort of gave him the ability, the right to be a license to carry out justice in the king. So Kihavanafik. So when Rav Shila was going out, so Amrali Hu Gavra, meanwhile, that guy who's now, his life is in danger, he says to Rav Shila, "Avid Rahmana Nisa Lashakri Hachi." How about God does miracles to promote falsehoods, right? So Amr Lehi, he says, "Rasha lav chamari ikru dechsivi." Says they are called donkeys, right? Asher basar chamrim bisaram, whose flesh is the flesh of a donkey, meaning you had relations with a mitzvah woman. Our Torah compares that person to a donkey. So I didn't lie; right? I told the truth. So Chazia de Ka'azel Meimer Luhu de Kreina Chamri. So if Shila saw that this guy was going to tell them that, you know what he just called you? Right? This guy is going to report to the Egyptians, right? That he called you a donkey, or he refers to you as donkeys. So Amr, he says, "Ah, if that's the hair," Shila says to himself, "Hi Rodefu, this person is now a Rodef." The Torah says, "Imbalahar Gha Hashkim Largo." If he's going to come to kill you, go to kill him first. So if Shela hits him with a rod, or the rod, right, and he kills him, right, he takes him out. Now was he technically a rodef? Well,
rodef is somebody escaping. What's a
rodef? A rodef is a pursuer. Now is he a rodef? So the Gemara seems to be saying yes, but what's he doing? He's giving over information to the non-Jewish government. So what is it? What does the Gemara seem to be equating? The Gemara seems to be equating the pursuer, a moser with a. With a rodef.
The one who had relations with the Egyptian woman was the rodef?
Yeah. Like he was the moser. He was going to go and tell them that he called, you know the way he talks about you behind your back? Alright, so he.
Is that what it says in the Torah? It compares somebody having a relation with a donkey to an Egyptian woman? Does it say?
It doesn't say Egyptian woman. It's a pasuk in Yecheskel that B'nai Yisrael had, they had various infidelities when they were in Egypt. So this is like not the part that they tell kids before the Pesach play. But the Jews did. There was a lot of intermarriage and things like that happening in Egypt. And the pasuk refers to, like, oh, these people think what happened with donkeys, referring to Egyptians in that pasuk. I think that's what's going on. So yeah, right. Okay, so that's a Gemara number two. Gemara number three, there is a Gemara number three, which is a story that we know, which is really sort of expressing a pasuk in Tanakh, and that which almost expresses the opposite. Right? That what is the story of Shaul and David, right? That Shaul is chasing David all over the place, and ultimately Shaul goes, and he hides himself in a cave in order to go to the bathroom. David happens to be deeper in that cave, and has the ability to kill Shaul. Instead of killing Shaul, what does he do? He cuts off the corner of his garment. So then he leaves, and then David all of a sudden pipes up from across the valley when he sees David, Shaul later, says, "Ha, look what I have. I could have killed you, but I didn't. Why do you keep going after me?" So the Gemara seems to be asking, well, what right did David have not to kill him? If Shaul is in fact a Rodef, if Shaul is in fact somebody who is pursuing David, so then David should have taken him out.
He's a king.
So what?
Really, it applies to king.
Well, from David's perspective, it does. Right? Shaul had no right to kill David. If Shaul would have killed David, it would have been done in an inappropriate way. Yes, it's true, the king does have a right to kill people when they're being married by Malchus, but only if they're being married by Malchus, which David wasn't doing. Shaul, whatever, we'll get up to in the spring, I guess, in the Shmuel Shir, what was going on there. But Shaul had no right to do that, so David should have taken him out. The fact that David didn't, the Gemara attributes to, was David was very impressed with the sneeze of Shaul, that Shaul went and hid himself, and so therefore David doesn't go ahead and do it. So what does that imply then? That perhaps implies that one does not have to do it. Now, does one have a choice? If somebody is running after me to kill me, do I have a choice and say, well, I could turn around and kill him, or I could not, and he'll kill me, right? Do I have a choice of doing that? So it's seemingly not. I don't have a choice to say, I'll die and let this guy kill me, but perhaps you do have a right when it's not imminent, when it's not an imminent thing. So perhaps that does give you a little wiggle room to say, well, you know, I'll wait and see what happens. Right? I mean, David could have killed Shaul and been out of danger. He's not killing Shaul. He remains in danger. And the Gemara seems to say that it's okay. That it's okay for him to remain in danger and not kill Shaul on the spot. Yeah? Okay, so...
The Rodef, if somebody kills a relative of mine...
That's a goal hadam. I mean, the relative pursuing him is a goal hadam. It's not.
Is he obligated to do that? This is my question.
Is he obligated to kill him? I'm not sure. I don't believe he has the right to.
He's obligated to kill him because, I guess, the city of refuge can't kill him. So.
It's his option.
Well, this is his option. The question is whether it's a mitzvah. That I'm not sure about to avenge the blood. Okay. So there are a couple of details. So where does that seem to leave one in these cases that we described? It seems to be that it at least is permissible to kill this person who is a potential moser. Now there is a little bit of a question here that the Rashba on that there's a tshuva of the Rashba. Where he asks, well, how did he know? I mean, have the story where Rav and where was it? That Rav Kahana killed that guy, right? So how did he know that this was actually going to happen? So I mean, how did he know that the guy was serious? So the there's a tshuva of the Rashba that says, you gotta at least know the guy is serious. That if the person had no previous record of informing, so then he maybe doesn't have a right to go and come in. He's just maybe making a joke, etc. But you have to be reasonably certain that the person is going to go ahead and do it. But with that real possibility that it could happen, so it seems like it is permissible. What about if it's a suffix? I'm not sure the person has a right. Doesn't record. I don't know. Is one permitted to do this even off these suffix? So there is a comment that the Minchas Chinuch makes in Mitzvah Tuf Reish. Mitzvah Tuf Reish is getting pretty close to the end, right? Taryag, so you have to tar. So that's number 600. So that is the mitzvah of saving a near death. So what if you're only besafek? Right off the bat, pretty close to the beginning, the Minchas Chinuch asks, what about if you're besafek about whether the person is? So he says, there is a rule where he says, "Delo shaych safek nefashus lahakil, but usan averish amru hen yahavur valyaharik." That, well, can I say, whenever a person's life is in danger, so we're going to be makil on that. So he says, we don't say that in a category of the three big ones, because then, like, the whole thing falls apart. heart. It says, well, I'm only besuffic going to violate this, so obviously we're going to treat those with a little bit more stringency. Because even the low kveda ha-Torah al-Nafsha was the person, the Torah is not being makbid on that person's health. The Torah is saying, die rather than violate the sin. So maybe you even have to die rather than violate a suffic on the sin. So they're thinking Mishra Sveikus. So we don't learn that for the Sveikus. But Hachanami, so to hear, Kim that Torah lo hikpida al-Nefesh ha-Rode, if the Torah doesn't seem to be makbid about the nefesh of the pursuer, because we're about to go ahead and kill it. So even if it's a suffic pursuer, even if it's only a question whether he's going to go ahead and do it, suggests Minchas Chinuch one has the right to go ahead and do it. However, with keeping in mind that there is this praiseworthy activity of David, that David didn't go ahead and do it, even though he was still keeping his life in risk. I'll, I don't have much time here, but we'll quote with one more or two more issues. Number one is the Beis Yosef here quotes from the Beis Yosef at the end of Simon Shin Pei Ches, quotes a Rashba, he doesn't quote the place. I think it's like a new Rashba wrote many editions of Shuvas. I think there's like another sefer of collected Shuvas of the Rashba that aren't published in his 9 volumes of 1,200 responsa each or so. But he quotes, this is the language of the Rabbi, Ksav Echad, in the writing. Shoshalcha Chachmi Tzerfas, that he wrote a tshuva to the people in France, Al Masur Echad Shehoru Harav Yonah Achai Ben Yosef, Yonah Achasid, Varashba Lemelech, Shehu Chayiv Misa, Betziva Hamelech Lahargo. Techilas Kol Hadvar, Mamarnu Zer Rodev Haya, Verodev Nerog, Becholzman Bein Baris Bein Bechutzlars. He says, that guy is a Rodev, he's going and reporting to the government, he's a Rodev. Vafilah Shulob Bevastin, even on Basin, as we see, Rabbi Shila took him on in Brachus Nun Ches. And David and Rodev Atavet Aram Rabbala Agacha Shkim Lagoev. Rabbi says somebody who is a huchsak as a rodev, kill him. Not just, and this is the big chiddush, bein b'shas maisa, bein la'achar maisa. Even if it's afterwards. I mean, if I were to ask you, okay, well, let's say the guy did it already, right? And now this person comes into our possession, right? So that kid, right, he went and told them. And now these Navy SEALs come back with this kid again. I'm not sure how you develop the case. But if a person is constantly going and telling the government about different things within the Jewish community, right, so now he doesn't know anything. So that's just the Rashba. You could go and kill him anyways. You could go and take him out. So what's his proof? So there's actually a Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah, which we're never really sure what it means, but there's a list of people, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah say, that gives you a couple of categories and says if you could throw them into a couple of people that if they're in a pit, you don't let them out. Somebody who's a Baal Avodah Zarah, if they're in a pit, you don't try to rescue them. There are some people that the Gemara says you can even throw them in, assuming you're not going to get caught. One of those people is Mesoros. Those people that are Moser, those people that are constantly in this activity. So Rashba says that you have the right to kill. It's not just he's a danger now, so we're going to save our lives from it. But even if it's after the fact, one has the right to take him out. That's
because of the potential of him doing it again.
It sounds like, or maybe a warning for others. It's unclear what exactly he's driving at. It is a specific story which I saw in the Masifta Gemara. At the beginning of it tells the whole story, but the whole story is not in the Vesios. So I couldn't.
Usually, once it's done already, then.
Right, so that's the chiddush of the Rashba. The chiddush of the Rashba is so I could say one of two things, which might even be connected. One is that. Well, he might do it again, meaning somebody who is in this business will continue to do it. And number two, as a warning to others. And that perhaps is the basis for all Mises Basin. So all times we kill people according to Basin, it is to demonstrate how terrible it is in order to warn other people not to do it. However, it is important to keep in mind, that there is a... and this I think Rabbi Akiva Mails, he was the first one who raised this issue a couple of years ago. He put a thing on a listserv asking for sources on the topic. So when I wanted to talk about this, I sent him an email, hey, did you ever give a shir? He sent this along to me, so I don't think we really gave what he was giving. But he does quote a important Rashi in last week's, 2 weeks ago, Parsha, that Yaakov was very afraid when he was going to meet Esau. That's what the pasuk says. That Vayirai Yaakov Ma'od, and he Vayitzer Lo Vayachatzat Zama Sheritov V'Son V'Zukar V'Lagnu L'Shnei Machanos. He divided everything up into two camps. Rashi comments there Vayira Vayitzer that he was very afraid and he was very distressed. What's the difference between the two? Vayira Shema Yahareik. He was concerned that he would be killed. Vayitzer Lo Im Yaro Kuas Achim, and he was nervous that he would kill others. That's what Rashi comments. So what is that nervousness that he's going to kill others? So one is, the Sefer Chaim suggests that he might have had to kill Esav, and Yaakov, he knew that Yitzchak really liked Esav, and he was afraid that Yitzchak would take away the bracha that he gave him if he went ahead and killed Esav. That's one suggestion he gives. Inami, Yishlomerti Yaakov, Vaday lo yari shem yaragis Esav. Yaakov wasn't concerned about killing Esav, because we know, Abalar gechash game largo, that Esav is coming to kill him. He'll have to kill him. Ella, she Yaakov hai misyari shem yarug kua nashim shel Esav, that he was going to kill Esav's people. Vulai heim lo balarogis Yaakov, Ella anashim shel Yaakov. And maybe they weren't going to kill Yaakov, except maybe Yaakov's people. Right? Esav balar, yes, Esav was going to kill Yaakov. Vafa pisha anshav shel Esav hai rote from achar anashim shel Yaakov, and even though they were pursuing Yaakov's people, vahol nithin lahatzil san nirdav benashim shel arodev, and in theory that should permit him to kill them also, was they're attempting to kill his people. If you could save your people by only taking out one of their limbs, you have to go and do that. And Yaakov was concerned that because of the fog of war, that's a bilbul hamelchama, literally the fog of war, he was going to kill them even if he would have been able to protect them without killing them. So, while yes, technically it seems, from what I can tell, I'm not posturing the shiloh here, but it seems like it is morally justified to take these people out. But you also keep in mind the fear of Yaakov of not overdoing it. Maybe we'll stop here. Okay.
Kamsa Bar Kamsa, where Rabbi Zacharias, remember, they wanted to kill Bar Kamsa, and they, that could have saved all the Jews.
Good point.
And then they said, you know,
but they didn't.
They didn't kill him.
Right. But he's. But
that would have been an appropriate time.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. But he's criticized for not doing it. Right, Zachari ben Afkulus is in charge. Zachari ben Afkulus said, we can't kill him. Well, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Right, we can't kill him. Because he's going to tell. We can't kill him because people are going to say, oh, you bring a bad offering, then you'll be killed.
The first one was.
I understand.
You know,
so the Gemara criticizes Zachari ben Afkulus. Says, oh, because of the anivas, because of the humility of Zachari ben Afkulus, the entire Semigdash was destroyed, implying that he was being overly careful. The simplest explanation is that he did the wrong thing.
But you should have killed him. You should have killed Bar Kamsa because he would have saved the
baby. Exactly. He, by him, Ari Ben Avkul is saying we're not going to kill Bar Kamsa, indicate he's criticized for that decision. So, there you go. All right, stop here.